Hello there. Welcome to the Pathfinder 101 podcast. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Swanik Jaikumar, and I started Pathfinder 101 with the intention of examining various professions beyond the basics by interacting with experienced professionals from various careers. This blog and podcast are from a high schooler's point of view. I hope you benefit from some of the information provided in the various blog posts and interviews. Everyone dreams of directing or acting in a film, but only a few follow through to achieve that dream. Have you ever wondered how one becomes a writer or a director and what they do in their profession? To me, those careers have always seemed ambiguous and hard to pursue. Film has always seemed like an industry that runs on internal connections within a closed network that is disconnected from the rest of the world. Today's interview will be with Mr. Kurt Volker, a writer and director who has worked on films including Sweet November and The Bachelors. We will be hearing about how exactly he entered this industry, clearing the fog surrounding this industry, and examining the different factors that helped him in his journey to where he is today. Hi, Mr. Volker.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm good.
Let's jump right into the questions.
So as a high school student, understanding the various professions and career paths seems to be a daunting task because there are so many choices available. And even if we hear about something, the exposure we get to these careers is very limited. So I would like to take you back to your high school days when you're thinking about your college, your career, etc. I'm assuming that you were in a similar situation like me with a bit of confusion and uncertainty in choosing the right path. And after a few years, you have a successful career today. And I'm sure you learned a lot during this journey. So I'm just trying to garner that information. So this first question is, what did you want to become when you were a high school student? And what made you consider that particular career at that time, such as like parents or mentors or certain experiences?
I didn't know what I wanted to be or what I wanted to do in high school. I had no idea. To be honest, I wasn't too worried about that fact. I was encouraged by my father to consider being an attorney, but I hadn't really thought. I didn't spend much time thinking of it. Sorry, that's not much of an answer, but it's the truth.
What were the different factors you considered in choosing your college and your major?
I chose my college, Harvard, because it's Harvard. So I applied because of the name. Which is not a great reason to apply to us. And I got in and I went because it's Harvard, which is, again, not a great reason to go somewhere, but that's what I did. What was the second question?
How did you choose your major or how did you
know? I was a history and literature major and I chose that just because it seemed interesting to me. It was a small department. It was honors only and you had to apply to it. That appealed to me a little bit that it wasn't just a, you know, one of these hugely popular majors that people kind of stampeded toward. And I did like, I liked literature and history a little bit. I didn't want to focus completely on history and I didn't want to focus completely on literature. So it seemed like a pretty good combination. It was not a career-based choice. I still had no idea what I wanted to do. And at the time, and I'm guessing it's probably still the case, there were very few, if any, directly career-based majors at Harvard when I was there. It was a, you know, classic liberal arts type college. So there was no business major. You couldn't be an accounting major. You couldn't be a, I guess you could be, I don't even think there was a computer science major. They had classes. There was not a host of practical career-based majors available. In fact, very little, few, if any, and I didn't know what I was interested in doing anyway, so it wasn't super applicable.
Could you talk about your journey from after college to where you are today?
Yeah, I graduated from college, and I still didn't know what I was. I ended up where I am today, which is working in the film industry, almost a process of elimination. I had worked a couple summers at a law firm in Dallas, and came out of that convinced I did not want to be. And most of the people I knew, if they had any direction, most of the people I knew in college were either going to go to law school or go to Wall Street. And I had ruled out law school. So I tried to get a job on Wall Street. And I don't know that I tried that hard, but I tried. And I actually interviewed for a job with Morgan Stanley. And they hired two of my roommates and not me. And I knew someone there and it kind of hurt my pride. I can't say I was devastated, but I was a little curious what happened. And I called him and they said, the guy I knew worked there said, yes, they really liked you, but they just didn't think you wanted it. And that was very true. So it was at that point that I decided, well, what would I actually do? I had never honestly thought very deeply about that. What would I, in a vacuum with nobody else's input, like to do? And that's when I came up with the idea to get into film. And I had no idea how to do that. I didn't know anybody doing it. I didn't know anyone who ever had done it. I was a blank slate of information, experience, or connections. So I got a job in New York City for the CBS News. A friend of mine worked there and let me know about a position, and I got it there. I was not interested in the news business, but it gave me a job for a year. And during that time, I applied to graduate film school, which for me ended up being a good move because I knew nothing about anything. And at the time, there was no internet. That's how old I am. So it was very difficult to learn anything about the film. Whereas now there are just an infinite number of resources. But for me, film school wasn't a good thing. I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anything. And so I came out to graduate school at USC in their film school of cinema and television. And then my final project there was well enough received that it opened the door for me and got me into the business. And I have been working in it for 26 years since then.
So if I could ask a quick question about how you narrowed it down to film, you said you used like a process of elimination. And that was the one that was left. Was there what like appealed to you at the time specifically in film?
Well, and by the way, I will say just in the on the off chance this might be slightly helpful to some people, I ruled out some things. And in hindsight, I'm not sure. I think those decisions might have been hasty. You know, I didn't think, I look back now, and one of the challenges about career choice, I mean, one of the good things is you can change, right? But one of the challenging things is one only has so much time. And if you change careers 10 times in your life, it's going to make it harder to get anywhere in any of them. So it's a bit of a catch-22 in that if you choose one career over another and you stick with the career you've chosen, you're not going to know what the other career would have been like. There's no way of knowing unless you actually. So for instance, in hindsight, I think, well, perhaps I should have explored medicine. I think that would be something to be into. But at the time, I had convinced myself I just didn't have the scientific acumen for it. But I think that was a hasty decision, and but so it goes. And what the point that the sort of pivotal experience in terms of that process of elimination and my arrival at that was I had seen a couple of films around that time, and they had a profound impact on me. And being that I was generally untethered and rudderless in terms of my direction, it occurred to me, wow, what if I could be a part of that experience or the process which makes that? I didn't know what the process was. I didn't know what roles were involved. I didn't know how to do it, how to get into it. I knew nothing. I just thought, those are incredible things that I have experienced in here in a movie theater. I would love to be a part of the process that generates and creates that. And that was where the idea, sort of the genesis of it.
What does a typical day or week look like for you? And what's your favorite aspect about your work and your least favorite aspect? And also third point on that, what are some skills that you find crucial or useful on a daily basis?
A typical day for me is I get up, I exercise, I try to get to work by about 8 a.m. I work into the afternoon. I find my brain, I work at home. I find that my brain tends to start to unravel in the mid to late afternoon. So I'd be lying if I said I got a ton of work done after that, quality work. My favorite thing about what I do is really just the creativity and you've probably heard it discussed when this concept of being in the flow. So when I'm in the flow of creativity, when it's working for me and I'm conceiving of ideas, because I 90% of my career, I've done some directing, but most of it's been writing screenplays. When it's just flowing and I'm lost in that the creativity of the moment and in the story and in the characters and in the dialogue or whatever it is I'm writing, that's a very fulfilling, almost sort of metaphysically pleasing place to be. My least favorite part of it is all the parts of entertainment and Hollywood and the film business that I can't control. So there's luck, good and bad. There is unpredictability. And, if you want a stable, secure career that's predictable, it is not the one you should choose. So I don't love that part of it. And the last thing you asked me was what?
It was crucial skills that you use on a daily
basis. I think it was, someone recently, I heard someone describe it as the one path to getting somewhere in terms of doing something like I do is you need to practice creativity through discipline. So one crucial skill is just to having the self-discipline to sit down and write, because writing is not terribly easy. In fact, it's very difficult for most people. And I had to teach myself, and it's still a daily challenge, though I'm far better at it than I used to be, to put your butt in the chair and do the work. I've heard some very successful, I know one particular writer and others, and the sum total of their advice often boils down to essentially or literally that. A lot of people talk about writing, a lot of people think about writing, a lot of people try to write, but the only way you're actually going to get anything done is if your butt in the chair. And you, as David Mamet said, you endure the sleepiness and the yawning and the self-doubt and the distraction and the procrastination, and you push through it. That's one skill. The other one I would just say is ideation and creativity, and then also writing, which is probably because I didn't do anything at all like this at St. Mark's. I wasn't involved in drama or theater or creative writing, any of that, for the most part. The only real exception to that is the late, great J.J. Connolly, who used to be a teacher there. He applauded my ability as a creative writer. And I was too, I think, young and stupid and naive to really think much of that. But in hindsight, he had put his finger on something that I think I had at least above average ability to do. So it wasn't something I cultivated until much later. But to some degree, I think you have that skill or you don't, or that knack or you don't. There's a certain degree of one's ability to write that I think cannot be. You either can or you can't, at least in terms of the kind of writing I do.
In terms of like a work-life balance, obviously much of like the film industry, there's a bit of flexibility with writing. You can do it like whenever you want. It's like not a chore for you and then what is your take on that? So how do you like manage that work-life balance well, or is that something that's not really important to you?
No, I think I do. I mean, one of the ways I do that is I got married and I have a son. So if one wants to succeed in marriage, or succeed as a father, you have to devote some time to it. And that's something I do, and it's something I want to do. And that's of tremendous value, because when work is frustrating for me, or exasperating or maddening or whatever the downside of it can be, that work-life balance, those other aspects of my life, the other aspects of my life that do have tremendous value to are a great counterbalance. I think when I was younger, and I think this is often the case, one can tend to think that their career or whatever their aspiration or goal is more important than anything else. And I also think it's probably incredibly common that as people age, they start to realize that there are other things in life that are as, if not more important. So I also think the work-life balance is something that comes somewhat naturally to me, because I would just lose my mind otherwise. There's only so much I can do in a day to try and advance what I'm doing, either due to my inherent limitations, well, entirely, because like I said, I can't write from dawn till dusk. My brain isn't capable of that. Most writers, I don't.
Another factor to consider when choosing a profession or a field is compensation.
Mm-hmm.
For example, with doctors, people invest like 10 or 11 years to become a doctor, and they're not compensated that well during that period, but after that they're compensated relatively well. So without going into specifics, what can one expect in this profession in comparison to others?
It's incredibly variable. I think with almost, law, medicine, business, all kinds of things, you're gonna be much more successful in an attempt to project or guess or sort of come up with guardrails and or what have you, markers in terms of, well, I should be able to make between this and this. That has zero application to this field. You can literally starve or you can win the lottery, and every version in between. So I know people who just couldn't make it and couldn't generate enough income to live and left the entertainment industry. I know many, many, many people like that. And I also know people who don't know what to do with all the money they're making. There's just no way to predict it, because like I said, it is phenomenally unpredictable. And there is not necessarily direct correlation between how hard you work and your talent level. Those things are extremely important, but there's a luck factor and a timing factor and a lot of mercurial elements that play into it. So I would say, if someone asked me that question, I would just say the sky's the limit and there's no floor either.
I would assume that one of those mercurial elements would be probably networking. And how important of a role does that play in your profession, and what habits have you cultivated to sort of keep that
going? I don't think I'm very good at that. So I think it depends a lot on the person. I think some people are gifted or inherently motivated to do that. I think it's not a strength of mine. I also believe there are limitations to how beneficial that can be in this business. It certainly can, absolutely. And I wouldn't even know the upside potential of that, of networking, because I have never devoted much time to it, and I don't think I'm particularly talented at it. But I also believe that to a certain extent, less so than, well, not always, but to a certain extent, this business can, on its better days, be meritocratic. And so one of the things I respected about it when I got into it was, hey, it doesn't matter if you're a purple alien who only speaks pig Latin, if your script or your short film or what have you, if it's damn good, people are going to want to work with you. It's not going to be about where you went to school. I mean, no one, for the most part, no one gives a damn that I went to Harvard. And there's a certain beauty to that in my book. That's not that ideal that I'm talking about. Doesn't apply perfectly. And there are things like politics and all kinds of factors that come into play you can't necessarily control. But as a rule, I would say the better you are at networking and the more you do, that's probably only going to help you, but it will also only get you so far. I've heard people say that, oh, well, the entertainment business is just who you know. And that's complete horse pucky. That's just garbage, because you could know everybody in the world and be a terrible writer, director, or actor. And guess what? You're only going to get so far.
You were talking earlier about some skills in your business, such as like creativity and how you develop that through discipline.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other ways to develop like the critical skills required in this industry?
Gosh, there are a lot of different. You can go to film school or you can go online. I mean, people ask me sometimes, should I go to film school? And I said, it just depends. If you don't know anything about anything and you can afford it because it's expensive, maybe you should. Though that's even less true today than it was, because there's so much online. I think if you have an inkling about what you'd like to do, what subset within the business appeals to you, you can accomplish an incredible amount through self-education and just proactive work on your part. But film school is one way. The other way is just to do it. I mean, but it depends what you want to do. I mean, I can speak the most, my opinion would be more informed, though hardly authoritative, would be more informed in the area of writing. And, you know, the way to develop that skill is to write, just again, butt in chair. And it would be to read and write and have your writing exposed to other people and get their feedback and study film. I think there's a lot in the process. A lot of this business, you have to take the initiative and educate yourself. Because even something like film school, it's not, you're going to graduate. If you graduate with a degree in film, it means almost absolutely. You can't take that degree or diploma and go, look, I went to film school. Your average response is going to, that you're going to meet with is, okay, well, you can go get coffee for us if you want, but it's not going to inherently lead to anything. It's a, for all intents and purposes, it's a worthless degree. What you would get there would be the relationships with people you meet and the practice of doing the work and the exposure to it. And in the best case scenario, the opportunity to generate some work that is good enough in the business. More often than not, though, I would say the way to develop the skills you need to succeed in this business is just to get out there and do it. Just whatever that means, pick up a camera and shoot something, start taking an acting class, and, you know, wrangle your way into audition somehow. Start writing scripts if that's what you want to do. It's not a sit back and take, you know, and engage in some process. Law school is going to get you somewhere more predictably and reliably. Same with medical school, same with business school. Film school is, it's a luxury that some people can afford and will not hurt you, but it's not going to reliably or predictably provide you with anything.
As a follow-up to that, would you recommend if someone is interested in film, pursuing that as sort of their major in undergraduate?
That's a really good question. I mean, if they're just completely convinced that's what they want to do, and they're just sure, really sure that they don't want to do anything else, sure, yeah, that might not be a bad idea. So it depends on the person, but I might also advocate maybe you split the difference. You take some film classes and things like that to expose yourself to it, because they may turn you off and make you realize I don't want to do. And also the downside of focusing entirely on film studies as an undergraduate is the opportunity cost of the things you're not exposed to. And there is a lot to be said for all the other things you could expose yourself to in school, which A, might catch fire with you and you might realize you want to do something else, or B, might prove helpful to you in the future if you're entering a creative field, to not, because, you know, it's tricky. But if you take a class in anthropology and you end up studying some primitive tribe in Borneo or something, and it's really interesting, that kind of thing could circle back around and be interesting fodder for something you do creatively later. So that's a tough one. It depends on the person.
And growing up, we usually hear the statement, like, follow your passion. And what is your opinion on following your passion? Because you've described sort of film as one passion that you watched, like, a couple of films, and then you were like, I wanted to be the person behind that process. Do you think this is really, like, passion is really important to succeed in your career? Or do you think it's something that's developed once you fully immerse yourself into that career?
Oh boy, it's tricky. I think if you're the best case scenario, and I don't think there are too many people who achieve this, their passion is also a very rewarding vocationally and financially. I do think the follow your passion thing can be taken a little too far. There is the practical side of life is very important whether you like it or not. But again, it depends on the individual. For some people, certain things are much more important than others. For instance, money. For some people, that's very important. Money, status, the neighborhood they live in, whether or not they're a member of a country club, what car they drive. Those can be very important to some people. And if that's the case, one might want to consider first avenues or careers that lead a little more predictably in that direction. For others, that's not quite as important, which I think can free you up to consider a few more things. I think a lot of it is about the individual. And though I do believe that if you shoehorn yourself into something because you believe it's a good idea, but it has no inherent appeal to you, that can end poorly. I do know, you know, people who really don't like what they do, or they have no passion for it, and it tends not to be a joy-making scenario. So, But it depends on it. Some people know they need security. People know they want, I literally had someone recently say, I knew I wanted nice thing, and that shaped their choice. Some people, a lot of it's what you feel in your heart. And for some people, they just have no idea. And so you got to pick something. I think that's important too. If you don't know, you're better off just trying something. There's trial and error. There's an element of trial and error. And just know that I think it's important that people realize that the first choice they make doesn't have to be their last.
How do you personally define success, and how do you like look up to, or what traits or characteristics do people have that you look up to in this industry?
In this industry, well, there are different measuring sticks for success throughout our society, and even within this industry. The most obvious measuring stick is financial success. I think generally, if you say someone's successful in our culture, you're implying that they've made a lot of money. I look up to people who have done well financially in this business, I don't say think that's my number one criteria. I would say the people I most respect have achieved something that I think is creatively admirable, something of high quality, something that I would like to have done, or something that I respect and admire their work. And I would look up to them even more if, in addition to that, it had provided them with some financial security or a decent income. If someone is doing incredible work and making no money from it, I would still consider them successful creatively, but I feel bad for them. And if someone is making a lot of money making crap, which I know some people that, I know people who make a lot of money making things that make me want to vomit, honestly. And I don't consider them successful creatively, but I do, they are successful financially. Their bank balance speaks for itself. I look up the most to people who can manage to achieve both to some degree, which I hope that makes sense.
Earlier, you were talking about how when you were in college, they didn't have like the internet resources to just look up like the different career paths available at the time. So in specific, in the film industry, how has this profession changed during the last couple of decades, especially with the focus on like technology?
Well, you just said it yourself. It was a fairly opaque industry. Very, very difficult for anyone to understand who was outside of it. And now you could learn a tremendous amount online about how it works, about how to do certain things, about just so much. So that's very different. Technologically, it's also become, you know, less expensive and prohibitive to create, for instance, a film or a video, which is a good thing. Though the technical side of it has never been one that interested me much. I think the changes in the business since I got into it that are far more profound, and in fact, kind of mind-blowing, is just how the creative output of Hollywood has changed. For instance, when I got in, there was no reality TV. To the point, in terms of my work, when I got in, the basic model of every studio was to put out a diverse slate of projects. Conventional wisdom and time had proven that the best way for a studio to survive was not to concentrate on one genre, but to make some comedy, some drama, some action films, some sci-fi, some animated, mix it all up, because you never knew what was going to work and what wasn't. Put all your chips in one thing, you could get burned. And that model is gone. It vanished within the scope of my career so far. Now the model is, the best case scenario from the point of view of the studios is spend $250 million making a superhero movie or some other franchise or sequel or tentpole movie, and then make $1 billion. That's their number one goal. That's what has worked for them. And that's what they want. They're not interested in a small or even a medium-sized film that is that could do well in terms of, say, doubling, making twice as much as it costs to make it. They just, you know, if you spend 25 and you make 50, they don't care. That's just small potatoes. They're not interested. And the world of independent film has shrunken. So you just don't get as many dramas. You don't get as many comedies. You get virtually no dramedies, things like that made within the studio system. Streaming has come along. Obviously, that's had a huge impact. I've seen TV go from sort of the bastard child of the entertainment business industry that sort of looked down upon creatively to now elevating to much higher quality. And in fact, kind of becoming the go-to place for the best work and the most money and, feature films, with the exception of the big Marvel movies and that type of thing. With the exception of that, the rest of feature films being perilously close to, reaching the endangered species, and COVID hasn't.
So this next question, completely on a tangent, unrelated, what is your favorite film work that you have not contributed to? That's the first part. And then the second one is that you have contributed to.
The first question, it's so hard because there are just so many films that I love. So I don't have a favorite, but I can tell you that one of the most, the two that sparked the idea at the time to me to actually get involved, one was Platoon and the other one was A Field of Dreams. Two incredibly different films, which appropriate, I think, for me, because if you look at the films I've worked on, they almost have nothing in common, which is actually how I prefer to work instead of doing the same type of thing over and over again. And also, John Hughes had a big impact on me. The Breakfast Club was my favorite. In terms of the films I've worked on, the one that I'm the most proud of is a small film called The Bachelors, plural. And came out about 5 years ago. It was released on, I think you can see it on Amazon. I know you can see it on a number of sites, but that might be the highest profile site where you can see it. It stars J.K. Simmons and Julie Delpy, and actually was inspired to some degree by my experience at St. Mark's. So anyone who's gone to St. Mark's would recognize that is evocative of that, because a lot of it takes place in a private all-boys school. And in fact, there's an all-girls school that is involved to a certain degree. And in fact, for our wardrobe department, I just told our wardrobe person to just completely rip off the Hockaday and just copy them. So, but I'm proud of how that turned out. And I directed that as well.
Do you have any final comments or advice to people in high school or in college, really trying to narrow down what they want to pursue in their futures?
I would just say explore. I wish I had, I don't regret my decision, but if I could do, say, for instance, college over again, and even high school, I would explore more. I would try more different things. I wouldn't stay in the lanes that sort of were the easiest to stay in. You do one sport, you get with one group of people, you end up in one clique. That's fine, but you're going to end up missing out. I wonder about the things I didn't do. So, one can do that in high school. I think college is an even better opportunity to do that, because there's so many clubs and classes and different kinds of people. A high school, you're going to be a little more limited, mostly to the town you're in, geography. It's just a smaller world, where I think most colleges, you're just going to get a greater diversity of people from a greater diversity of places, doing a greater diversity of things. And I would encourage young men at St. Mark's or young people to explore, check things out. You never know what is going to turn you on. You never know who you might meet. Because the relationships you make in your life can be incredibly important and helpful. And I don't just mean in a cynical networking way. I would never encourage anyone to develop relationships for purely transactional reasons, but because they actually genuinely like people. So the more you explore, the less, don't be lazy and stay in your comfort zone, and because that just means you will, the buffet of life, you will end up trying fewer things, and who knows what you'll miss.
Thank you for taking time to address these questions.
Thanks to everyone who's listening for choosing to spend your valuable time with this podcast. I hope you found this useful. To get notified about future episodes, please subscribe or follow Pathfinder 101 on Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Also, please visit Pathfinder101.com for more content. If the blog or podcast added some value to you, please like and share it with your friends and colleagues. Thank you, and have a great rest of your day.